Welcome to the Inside College Soccer Podcast, bringing together some of the best college soccer-related people to your earbuds, from coaches to players and beyond. So, thank you for tuning in. The Inside College Soccer Podcast is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA, the college soccer experts. Now, enjoy the show.
Well, hi, everybody. This is Don Williams on Inside College Soccer. I'm really excited today about our guest. He will be the first non-soccer coach that we've had on. I just had to think about that. But I ran into our guest on Twitter. Just popped up in my feed like a lot of people do, right? And I started following what he says, and I said, oh, I like this guy. And then he said something the other day, and I said, oh, I really like this guy. We got to talk. So his bio says, Christian, husband, father, papa, head coach of Coronado football, teacher and keynote speaker. Welcome my guest today, Coach Kurt Hines. Hey, Kurt, how are you doing, brother?
Don, I'm blessed. I appreciate you having me. And obviously, you know, for your listeners, I shouldn't say obviously, but for your listeners, you and I just meeting face to face, if you will, for the first time. But you've got an infectious smile and spirit about you. So I'm blessed to be here.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you, and I appreciate the content you share. I'd like to start with your background a little bit. Most of my audience is soccer people. They don't follow American football, but I'll tell you, Kurt, since the first day I started coaching and really deciding that I like this and I wanted to learn about it, I started studying what basketball coaches are doing and football coaches are doing. And I'd go watch practices of different high school coaches and different coaches that I respected in other sports. So I think what you and I probably have to talk about today relates, everybody can relate to in the world of sports and soccer much. I think we'll just talk a little bit about our experiences and try to share with people. And I appreciate you coming on. Why don't you give us your background a little bit so people have an idea of who we're talking to?
Yeah, born and raised in Barrington, Rhode Island. I did play soccer for 1 year. I think it was second grade. I was a fat little kid running across a field that was way too big for my body. And I thought, I need to play a sport where I can hit. This running around is too much for me. Grew up blue collar, middle of the road, financial family, if you will. Never had extravagant things, but never needed anything. Food was always on the table. Maybe a little bit too much food for me, but just fell in love with football. You know, growing up playing that sport. But I went to college, Don, to become an elementary education teacher. I actually had a high school football coach who owned a daycare center just down the road from my house. So started working with children when I was a junior in high school. And knew at a very early age that I wanted to teach. Didn't register nowhere on my radar whatsoever about coaching until I was in college. I was playing football at Plymouth State, Division III college program in New Hampshire. And one of my professors was looking for a volunteer for a special needs flag football team. And she and I started talking, and I said, I'd love to do it. And it was just down the road from the college I was attending. And there was a moment, Don, that I'll never forget. It was really changed the trajectory of my life. And that is, it was the first practice we had. And there was a young woman, I believe sixth grade, that has Down syndrome. And she and I were standing less than 4 yards apart. I was tossing a football to her underhand, and she dropped it and would laugh and dropped it and would laugh and dropped it and smile. And when she finally caught it, the sixth, seventh time, whatever it was, her whole countenance just changed. She just lit up like she had just won the Super Bowl. And I remember, I still get goosebumps to this day. Mm. I remember thinking to myself, I want to do that. I want to combine my passion for people, which really led me to want to teach, with football. So I actually ended up, my wife and I got married young. We got married at 22. I was teaching right out of school. And my first 4 years, I didn't do anything other than being a husband, father, and teacher, kind of getting my my footing, if you will, as a young married man. And then
Right.
my fifth year, I transferred to a different, or I took a job at a different town and reached out to a local high school football coach and said, I'm looking to volunteer. Or I'm looking to coach, not looking for a paid position. And he said, well, let me come by your classroom such and such a day. And he just so happened to come by with the manager of that team, which was a young man who had Down syndrome. And without getting preachy to you or your audience, for me, my faith is everything. And I remember thinking to myself, I'm like, all right, God, there's a correlation here.
Right.
And I coached with him for 7 years, and I was a head freshman coach. At the end of every season, he said, hey, Kirk, come on up to the varsity. I was like, I'm good. I have my own little thing going down here. And I had no desire to even be a varsity football coach. And then I got a call one day from the head coach in the town we were living in. And he said, tired of coaching against you. I see what you do for your program there. We'd love to have you coach in your own hometown, where my wife and I, we have 3 daughters and 1 son. And the thought of potentially coaching my own son led me to leaving that first school I was at. Still in touch with that head coach to this day. He has since retired, but a great man and a great coach. He knew the game of football, but more importantly, he knew people. And that's really what
Right.
turned me on to the importance of what he was doing correct in my mind. Went to this new school, and within 2 weeks, I remember coming home to my wife and I said, Jill, I'm done. I'm going to honor my commitment. I'm going to finish the year. But the school I was coaching at, the coach used people, didn't really know the game of football that well, but that was the least of it.
Right.
And she said, well, why don't you apply to be the head coach at Bedford? It was a brand new high school she had just started working at as a secretary, and they had just been around for 1 year. And I said, Jill, I've been a freshman coach for 7 years, a varsity assistant for a few weeks. I'm not qualified. And she said, we'll give it a shot. I gave it a shot. And long story short, set records my first year as head coach of getting beat up by any more than any other school in the history of football.
Okay.
Yeah, it was ugly. But really what happened, I look back at that first year and it was my greatest year of coaching ever. It was not enjoyable. It was painful. But the reason I say it was my greatest was because it really made me solidify my why I want to be a head coach and why I want
Right.
to. I think any coach, any sport, if done correctly, it's a huge commitment, whether you are a position coach, a coordinator, head coach. But to be a head coach, there's a lot more that falls on your shoulders, good, bad, and not so much indifferent, but good and bad. But for me, it solidified the fact that I want to have, and this word can turn some people off, but I want to have the power to decide who I was coaching with. I want to have the power to hire the men and or women that were going to be side by side with me in the trenches, so to speak, coaching these young men and young women. And
Sure,
for me,
it's culture, right? You had a vision, and you need to be able to bring in the people who will help you build your culture.
Exactly. So, and that's what kind of led me into becoming a head coach. And fast forward, 7 years, my last 4 years there, we had built a powerhouse, had 144 young men in the program per season, and had gone to the state championship 3 out of the last 4 years I was there. And then our
Wow.
oldest daughter had called. We had built something really special. And my oldest daughter had called and said, I'm pregnant. She'd gotten married. So we
Right.
sold everything and we moved out to San Diego, California. And
Right.
haven't looked back. I was an assistant at a different school for 2 years, took over at Coronado High School as the head coach there 7 years ago. And I love everything about it. There are obviously stressful moments in all walks of life, no matter what you do, no matter how much you may love your job, there are stressful moments. But it's an opportunity, as you know, to coach a sport you love, and more importantly, to change lives.
Right on. And let's face it, man, especially this time of year, Coronado is not a bad place to be.
No, it's not.
San Diego.
I don't miss the snow and cold whatsoever. The
Yeah,
politics and the taxes are crazy, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, believe me, I'm a lifelong Californian, and but we live in the middle of nowhere, up in the mountains, so it kind of feels like somewhere different. So I want to talk a little bit about your coaching philosophy. So if this was a job interview, they always want to ask you what's your coaching philosophy. So what what how, How would you describe that to people?
Servant leadership. For me, being successful in life, in all walks of life, family, business, coaching, it comes down to having leaders. I think all too often leaders feel like they are in charge. They need to be listened to and answered to, and everyone needs to be their little worker bees. And really what I've come to learn is that, yes, we are in charge, but that charge is more of a calling. It's a calling to say, hey, I've been blessed with an opportunity to lead these young men and or women. And not only those that we coach, but those we coach with. And we need to serve them. And I tell our coaching staff all the time, my number one job is to serve our coaches. And in doing so, we are all going to serve our players. And then we're going to create a culture of champions. And that doesn't always translate. This past season we only won 3 games, but it was an amazing season. Now, not every parent agreed with that, and some people were not happy. But the great majority of them understand what we're doing. And our goal is to build champions on and off the field. So for me, servant leadership is what it's all about. You know, looking to build relationships with those that we are blessed to coach and coach with, to meet them where they are, find out what their why is, because we don't all have the same why. Some young men and young women are playing a sport just because it's just fun for them. They don't care about going to college. The great majority of them don't care about going to play at the next level. Some of them, that is their end game. That is their goal, is to get a college scholarship. For some of them, they are, whether they admit it or not, they're coming from a place at home where it's not a comfortable setting. There may be neglect or abuse or tension, you know. So to meet our players where they are and to help them to get somewhere collectively where we can all look back and say, hey, that was not only fun, but we all grew.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And anybody who's coached for a long time has seen a lot of different whys in their kids. But as a coach, knowing what your why is, I think, is even more important, understanding why you're doing this. So there are, and this kind of goes to the tweet that you did a video and you were talking about basically about coaches' different whys, one being the transactional coach and then one being the transformational coach. And why don't you talk about that a little bit, about how you came to that conclusion in life?
Yeah, and I need to give all credit here where I did gain that knowledge from. Joe Erman, I'm not sure if you're familiar with him.
It's one of my favorite books,
I love
Inside
that.
Out Coaching.
Yes.
My son was taking a master's class and says, Dad, I just read the most important book on coaching I've ever read in my life. I said, oh, I got to get it. And I got it. And then I bought a copy from all my assistant coaches and my athletic director.
I love that.
Such an important book.
Yeah. And to summarize, not for you, obviously, but for maybe some.
No, but please. That, yeah. Go ahead.
And this is the poor man's summary version of it, if you will. My takeaway was that, I almost said Don, but Joe broke down, it doesn't matter if it's football, basketball, lacrosse, baseball, soccer, he broke down all coaches at all levels into two categories: transactional, those who will treat their players like a bank transaction. I'm going to pour into you, Don, because you have a great history with soccer, you have great connections, and I'm going to make it believe like I'm really there for you, but it's to pad my own resume to really help myself. Right. And then there's transformational coaches, the coaches that understand that player that may never be a varsity player, that player that may never score a goal or score a touchdown, that player that may never fit the mold of someone that's going to be a difference maker in your program, they have just as much value as that star athlete, that star player. And in his book, he goes through just the different trials and tribulations he faced and growing up and what he thought a successful athlete needs to look like and be like and perform like. For me, it's everything. And I think all too often, those of us that are blessed enough to stay in coaching long enough, and I know you have since 1989, it said, I read.
Yeah, that's when I started coaching my kid.
I love that. You do. I think we see it all. We see coaches who we aspire to be like man, that person just has a heart and a knowledge and a passion that I need to get better myself. And then we see the opposite. We think, man, they're in it for only their own child, or they're in it because man, something must have happened in their past where they're not, they're trying to live vicariously through their players. So for me, that's where that came from. The importance of knowing our why, of using the platform. And one of the pet peeves I have, if you will, is when people say sports build character. And I think, oh, no, they don't. No, they don't. Because I've been on staffs before where the last thing they're doing is building character. Right. I think sports only build character when we as coaches intentionally teach and, more importantly, model character. You know, I can't imagine, now I know nothing about the game of soccer except that there's too much running for my fat little body when I was younger. I'm no longer little, but I'm sure you've never gone into a practice or let alone a game without some type of practice or game plan. We know right. what skills we need to work on, how we're going to do them, what drills we're going to do. And I think all too often we just say, oh, sports build character, without intentionally saying, well, what does that look like? How are we going to build that character? And for me, this was a learning process over now 29, or I'm sorry, 26 years, going on my 27th year coaching, where I think sometimes we put a logo on a weight room wall or in a locker room, or we slap a logo on a t-shirt and say that that's who we right. are. And that right. might point to what our culture aims to be, but it comes down to relationships. I already have a greater vested interest in you and following your content now because of this conversation. And right. I think when we pour into those we coach and coach with and get to know them on a personal level, not only will it translate to the field, court, rink, or whatever sport we may coach, but most importantly, it's going to translate to their hearts. And when I took the head coaching job out here in Coronado, you know, I told you a little bit about the history at Bedford High School where we lost every game my first year and we built a powerhouse. My offensive line coach took over as head coach when I left. He's one of my best friends now, but he and I were like this our first 2 years coaching.
Okay.
He was a Division I athlete. I'm 6'2", 260 pounds. At his height, no pun intended there, I think he's about 6'4", and he was about 280 in college and just,
wow.
just chiseled out of granite. He's just a freak, right. Freak of nature. But he thought coaching was all about, no, you don't need to build relationships, be friends with these people. Just, we need to win games. It's all about the X's and O's. And I had countless conversations with him saying, Derek, I completely disagree. We'll go to my grave disagreeing with that. It's all about relationships. Yes, we need to know about the sport we coach. Yes, we need to be students ourselves, but it's about relationships. Well, our relationship, he and I grew and evolved over years where we're together often. He and his wife actually moved out to San Diego, not to follow us. She's from Oceanside, but we now get together with them often. But when I took the head coaching job out here in Coronado, we uh-huh. lost our first game. And he called me the following morning and he said, hey, Kurt, just don't worry. You're going to build what you built in Bedford. Just, you know, question for you. How long do you think it'll take? And I remember I was standing in the kitchen and I said, Derek, you're going to hate this answer. He goes, what? And he was expecting a time frame of 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. And I said, one relationship at a time. I think that's how long it takes to build a successful program. It's one relationship at a time where the young men that or young women that we're coaching, after a tough loss, after a tough practice, a tough off-season workout, whatever it is, if their parents see them come home, even after a defeat, and they're smiling, and maybe they're crying and they're mad about the loss, and I get that. But when all the dust settles, they see that their child is growing and they are being nurtured and empowered and poured into. That's what makes all the difference.
No, I think you're so right. And each of us need to, here's what I've noticed after all my years, people infect other people.
Oh yeah.
That can be positive, by the way, and that can be negative. So I think as coaches, if we can infect enough key players that they can begin to infect other key players and they can infect other key players. My best years of coaching when my teams were most successful were my easiest relationship management years. Almost no issues. If there were issues, I didn't even know about them half the time. The team already took care of them before it got to me. Then by the time it got to me, they said, we've already taken care of it. Don't worry about it. And when that happens, they bought into the culture. The team begins to enforce it, but But that happens through empowerment. You talked about this in one of your video tweets about coaches empowering other people versus coaches trying to grab power or take power or use power. Well, let's talk about that a little bit.
Diving into that, I think once again, I think unfortunately too many leaders, we're talking about coaches, but whether it's bosses, principals, you name it, they have that title of leader, whatever that title may be, coach, head coach, boss, CEO, but there's a lot, they're masking a lot of insecurity, and they want to be surrounded by a lot of yes men, people that are just going to follow what they do blindly. And I don't think that's good for any of us. I think even as a Christian, I don't want to blindly follow my Savior. I want to read the Bible. I want to study it. I want to talk to people who know more and all that. And I think way too many of them, way too many leaders are afraid of confrontation, want to shut it down right away. And I tell our staff, I don't want yes men on our staff. I want you to challenge me. Now there's a place and a time. We throw an interception in the game. I don't want you to say, why don't you run the ball there or something like that. But I want to be challenged. And I think the great majority seek power as opposed to empower. And once again, what is our legacy as coaches? I want my legacy to be, as much as Coach Hines loved the game of football, he loved the people more. And that's only going to happen by creating more leaders. And I shared at a speaking engagement several years back, and I'm not proud of this, but this is the God's honest truth. I usually miss one practice a year, one practice a season. I teach elementary school. That's what pays the bills. And one night a year, we have parent-teacher conferences where I need to say to our staff, hey, I'm not going to be here on such and such a day, and here's the game plan, here's what we're going to do. And and I'll usually say to my assistant head coach or another trusted staff member, hey, text me afterwards or call me, let me know how things went. And without fail, back in New Hampshire, a real good friend of mine, without fail, would usually say, hey, just it was good, but it's not the same when you're not there. And I used to I'm not proud of this. I didn't realize I was doing it at the time, but I used to act like I was upset. I was like, oh, you're kidding me. Oh my gosh. But in my mind, I'd be like, that's right. You're not the same when I'm not there. You're not the same. I was flying to Mississippi to speak at an engagement one time, and there was some turbulence, nothing to write home about, but it was enough to have me be like, oh, all right, God, and immediately started thinking about my family. Now, once again, it was not turbulence that you would see. It was nothing, but started thinking, God, if something happens to me, I want my wife to thrive. I want her to find someone else. I want my children to thrive. I want our grandchildren to thrive. And then after that little thought and prayer, I thought, oh my gosh, I've been lying to myself and to our staff because if something happens to me where I need to be hospitalized or something happens to me and I can't be there, forget about a day. But if I need to be removed from coaching for a week or a month or whatever, do I really want our team to thrive? And the answer is yes, but I wasn't there yet, maturity-wise, I guess. So what I realize now is I need to share my why, not just with our players and help them find their why. I need to share my why with our staff and our families and help them find their own why. And I tell our team now, hey, guys, tomorrow, Tuesday, I'm not going to be there. I get parent-teacher conferences. Please make me jealous. Please, from the bottom of my heart, have one of the coaches call me like best practice ever and have me like, oh, but that's only going to make us all better. Yeah. So I like that. Yeah. I think more of us, and it's a constant, I think culture, I think leadership is never a finished product. I think it's a living, breathing organism where it should always be growing and evolving. And that's where I am today with my leadership and my comfort and my strategy to lead others. But I also am keenly aware that I need to keep learning and growing myself, because as technology changes, as people change, as generations change and grow, if I'm not changing and growing with them, and I'm not saying there aren't certain things we should hold on to and say, hey, no, this is a tried and true, this has always worked. And I'm not saying we've always done it that way, so we're always going to do it that way. But hey, squats are a tremendous lift if taught correctly. That's always going to be part of, our workouts. So yeah, that's how I feel about that.
Yeah. So have you noticed, so you've been at this 25 years, I've been at it almost, yeah, little over 30, 33, 34. And I have noticed in the last 15, 12 years, maybe, probably about 12, 15 years ago, a literal change from the kids that were raised by parents who served in the military or went through the Depression. And it was just do what I tell you to do, doggone it, and then don't worry about it. And if a coach ever said to my parents, I don't think they ever did because I loved to play, we have a kid problem with your kid. It wasn't even a question that the coach was 100% right and I was 100% wrong. It's like, what did you do? How did this go? They're an adult. They know better. And I've noticed a shift. Yeah. And I wonder if the coach could be wrong on the soft side too. My kid's never wrong on the harsh side, which I think is a small percent. But how have you adapted your coaching as we've seen I think it's a smartphone generation. I think that's what it was. I think I can almost tie it to when every kid finally had a smartphone that things began to change. How have you changed as a coach?
Yeah. First of all, I wish I could sit here. I'd be lying to you, but I wish I could sit here and say, no, I haven't seen that at all. But you hit the nail on the head. There were several gentlemen. I think I was on a podcast 2020 during COVID, whatever it was, with there were five friends that did a podcast together. It was kind of a cool setup, but I was a guest at one of their shows and the similar topic came up, coach. And one of them, I don't remember the gentleman's name. I think it was called the Power Five podcast. I believe so. But one of them said they call it the 9/11 effect. And I had never heard that. And they said, well, they think when 9/11 happened, so many parents with the best of intentions just want to protect their kids and want to, they don't use the word coddle, but I thought,
it's
man,
scary times at that. It certainly was a scary time.
Absolutely. And I think so many parents do it with nothing but best of intentions, but just causing so many future problems down the road in horrible ways. How I have addressed that, it's funny you should say that, is really, really just in one way. I still speak to the students the same. And I tell our staff, you should never have a conversation with one of our players that you wouldn't smile at if you found out it was recorded secretly by them. They shouldn't hear a word. You shouldn't have a word come out of your mouth or say it in a way or whatever.
That's being great advice for people, by the way. I always say, don't talk about anybody. Think about somebody sitting in the booth behind you at a restaurant, and then you're talking about them. And then whatever you would say, you can say.
Exactly.
I think you're smart. That's smart.
And not to get too far off track.
Right.
But man, how many times people just stop talking and they don't like that. And like, no, listen, I want to be that trusted friend. I want you to come to me, but you got to stand by your words. And with my wife and I, with our four children now, who are now 25 through 32, I will often say things about one of my children to another child. And they have heard me countless times say, anything I'm sharing, you can share with so-and-so. You can share, because I don't ever want our children, especially thinking I'm talking behind their siblings' back. The thing I've done, coach, is whenever I know I'm having a conversation that might be taken, it might be a hard conversation. Maybe they're not going to be starting. I'm going to ask them to change. They're trying to be a quarterback. They need to be a wide receiver or whatever it may be. When it might be a sensitive conversation, I always have another coach there. I just have another coach there. And when I need to meet with parents, I always have an administrator or my assistant head coach there, because our perception and our reality and the things we say are our perception and our reality. But the things we're saying them, the individuals we're saying them to in the exact same room might hear the exact same words we're saying in a different way. So I think having another trusted adult there with you during those times is not only beneficial for all people involved, but it also, I'll never ask another coach in our staff to be present during a meeting without at some point in that meeting turning to them saying, is there something you'd like to say? And sometimes there is, and oftentimes there aren't, but to give them a voice, because sometimes I think I'm saying something very clear and concise, and there have been a few times where they're like, well, coach, I think what you meant to say was, and I'm like, oh, thank you. Yeah, I that did not come out the right way. So I also think, I know you've heard the saying, if you want to make everyone happy, sell ice cream.
Yeah.
Maybe that was true when you and I were children, but now there's going to be someone
Right.
who's lactose intolerant who's not going to be happy that you're selling ice cream. It's
Mm.
going to want to cancel you. I had read something. Do you remember Wayne Dyer?
Do.
Yeah. So years ago, a friend of mine who he's just become a great friend. We met 9 years ago moving out here to California. I used to always think ego was that cocky, arrogant man and or woman who just thought they were better than everyone else. And a friend of mine, Mark Tighe, shared with me something Wayne Dyer had written in one of his books that talked about ego. And Wayne described it as EGO, edging God out. And he said, so often we unknowingly are edging God out of our calling as a coach, out of our, when people would ask me to speak at places, I still struggle with this sometimes. When people ask me to go speak at certain events, I think to myself, I'm a Division IV high school football coach in San Diego, California. I haven't coached collegiately. I don't have a desire to. I haven't coached professionally. I don't have a desire to.
Right.
And I start questioning what God has placed before me. And the reason I bring that up is I think we need to, as we realize society has changed and the youth we're coaching has changed, their parents have changed. At the same time, don't edge God out of those tough conversations. Keep being who we need to be. And at the end of our coaching days, whenever that may be able to say, you know what, I blessed and empowered, or I tried to bless and empower everyone that came across my path. And not everyone liked it. I've had players that, man, they thought I was and families that thought I was the best thing since sliced bread until their son was a senior and didn't get some team award that they thought their son should get. And all of a sudden,
Right.
I was the devil.
Right.
And if we try to be people pleasers, we're going to fail miserably. If we try to empower everyone, we may not succeed every time, but we're going to live a life, and I don't want to say more importantly, but just importantly, we're going to have coached a career that was well worth coaching and having, because we're going to change more lives than not.
I like that, Kurt. So you're in an elevator with a young coach who's got an interview on the 42nd floor, and you're going all the way up there with him. And you get in the elevator, and he says, "Give me one piece of advice before
Yeah.
my interview. We get to the 42nd floor. What would you tell that young coach?"
Oh, that's such a great question. Because my mind wants to say so many things, but you said one thing. Be true to yourself. I think too often we want that coaching position so badly that we don't take the time to look at what is the culture of the school? How do they define success? What are they looking for in a coach? And we try to mold ourselves where I have to sound and act like a Bill Parcells or a Tony Dungy or whoever it may be. If we're not true to ourselves, the young men and young women are going to see through it. We're never going to be comfortable in our own skin. We're never going to be where our feet are, and we're not going to last. So I think first and foremost, I love that question. I think we need to be true to ourselves.
It's a fantastic answer. I've had that lot of kids that we deal with, they're and kids that we talk to all around the country, they're chasing the wrong schools, man, for the wrong reasons. They're chasing it for the name on a sweatshirt, man. They're chasing it
Yes.
for that. God, that would be an amazing social media like
Yes.
post that would make, and this would make my parents so proud, my coaches would be proud, and it's everything except this is the right fit for me.
Yeah.
Everything but that. But I also think coaches chase the wrong schools.
Yes.
I think the coaching, look, I've been there, dude. I've been offered jobs. At one point, I decided, I'm going to be a full-time college coach. That's what I'm going to be many years ago. And I went and finished my master's degree and did everything I needed to do and then started interviewing. And I had like 250 applications I put out in 1 year. And I got, I don't know, a handful of interviews, 15, 20 maybe. And I got like two or three offers. And one of them was like a school in South Dakota. And my wife and I are looking at each other. And I said, "Do you really, should I really go any further with this? Like, you really want to move to South Dakota?" I said, "No." Right. So could be, chasing the wrong school is just not right for your family, or it could be that culture thing that we're talking about. So I really like that true to yourself thing? Because I think more often than not, most of us coaches could be happy just about anywhere if the culture's right.
Yeah,
Right?
And I agree and I appreciate that. I had, through Twitter, I had an athletic director in Georgia reach out to me about a year and a half, 2 years ago now, and it wasn't a written contract, but said, hey, well, we want to fly you and your wife out here. We followed you for years. Our head coach just stepped down. And he painted a picture, Don, that was a dream coaching job. I'd still be coaching high school football. And the reason I say high school, I realize that it doesn't matter if it's high school, college, professional. If our heart's in the right place, we can and will change lives. But for me, it was a dream coaching scenario, making more money than I've ever made at a bigger, better school with my schedule would have been like just a dream. And long story short, I had a very good conversation with the athletic director. I said, the only reason we moved out here to San Diego was to be closer to our grandsons. That was about 5 years ago. So not ready to move away yet. I said, give me a week to pray about it, talk to my wife. And there were so many things that were pulling at us saying, oh, imagine this and imagine that. And imagine, but the single most thing that the deciding factor, it didn't align with my why. Because my why is to bless, serve, and my why, and I'm not just talking coaching, to my core, I believe that I was sent here on this earth. I don't think I'm special or better than any other coaches, but at the same time, I don't think there's a better coach out there than me. And what I mean by that is how I define success is changing lives. And my why is to bless, serve, and empower as many people as I can. I think too many coaches chase logos. I could have gone to Johns Creek, Georgia, and who knows whether I would have had success there or not, and it would have been a 10-year, 20-year, or one-and-done type situation.
Right.
I'm not naive enough to think that sometimes those dream jobs come and go faster than before the ink dries on the contract.
Right.
But at the same time, that dream job would have taken me away from what is and has always been the most important to me is family. So it wasn't worth it. I called the gentleman back the following Friday. And as soon as he answered, he goes, Coach, your ears must have been ringing. We were talking about you. And he goes, we got some good news. I said, well, hold that thought for 1 second. So I told him where my heart was. And he said he completely understood. And I said, I realize I'm closing a door that may never open again in this scenario. But it was a great conversation. I still keep in touch with him to this day. I got home and my wife asked how it went. And I told her, and she said, well, what was the good news? I said, Jill, I said, they weren't going to move our entire family, our kids and our grandkids and all of us out there. So I don't know. To this day, I still don't know what the good news was. And I haven't lost a second sleep with that, because I think when we don't chase logos and don't try to please others, but live authentically our own true lives and true selves, and we allow ourselves to be who we feel we've been created to be, we're still going to have struggles. We're still going to have challenges, but we're not going to go wrong. I'm not saying we're not going to be wrong, but we're not going to go wrong.
So young coaches, players, please hear that again. Play that back again, because I think that applies to anybody in life, not just coaches. That's really good advice, Kurt.
I appreciate that.
Well, brother, we've been at this a little while now. I really appreciate you coming on. Now, you've got a website, right? CoachKurtHines.com. That's Kurt with a K. CoachKurtHines.com. Tell us about your projects that you've got going.
Yeah, the mastermind behind that, I think like most happily married men, my wife and I have been married for 29 years now. I outkicked my coverage, as I say, in the football world. I married someone smarter than I am and far prettier than I am. My wife and my daughter, my older daughter, I respond to every private message on all social media platforms, not out of obligation, but for me, life's all about people. It's just, why wouldn't you respond to someone's private message? And sometimes the response is, thank you so much. No, thank you so much. I'm not interested in doing that. But what happened was several years ago, I was asking to do more speaking engagements and different things. And my wife said, you can get paid for doing this. I'm like, yeah, well, yeah, but why? And then I got a private message from ADT Securities. And, well, I didn't know that yet. I jumped the gun on that one. I got a private message from a gentleman on Twitter. Said, been following you for years. Would like to fly you and your wife out to the Bahamas to have you speak. I thought it was one of those emails that we get that says, "Kind sir, I'm from Uganda. I want to put money."
Sure,
money
yeah.
Account, you know,
a prince
so
has left you money, right?
Exactly. So I almost didn't respond, but I did, and it was a very professional, very, very short. "Thank you so much for your interest. Please email me at my business." You know, and that's where my older daughter said, "Dad, let me be your business manager." And she knows, and honestly, sometimes to a fault, I let my heart get in the way too much. And she said, "When someone has a speaking engagement or some other business deal, you can connect them with me. I'll be that business partner. Take your heart out of it." And it's worked out great. That actually ADT security things was a real speaking gig and a real situation.
Right.
But even with them, I asked them the following day, they got back to me. I was on a Zoom call with this gentleman and his boss. And I said, "I'm not trying to talk myself out of an opportunity, but why me? I'm not this gentleman. I'm not this person. I'm not this woman." And they said, "But you're real." You know, and people in that own our ADT, they don't like to use the word franchise, I found out, with ADT. But in that similar model, they're all competitors. Whether they were high school, collegiate athletes or not, they're all in
right.
the business world now, competitors. And they want to hear from someone who's living it, so to speak. So yeah, my daughter is the mastermind behind she's my business manager that says, yes, you should do this or no. But I recently wrote a book is in the process of being published now. So I'm excited to see where.
Yeah, tell us just a little bit about that, Kurt.
I'm almost underwhelmed when I describe it, because what happened was a lot of people, through the kindness of their hearts, said, "Man, you should write a book someday." And then someone, I don't remember who it was, said, "You should just write a book of your tweets." And I thought, well, that's lackluster. That's kind of lazy. That's kind of boring. So what I did, however, and I'm excited about it, was I went back over several years, and the book, the outline of the book, if you will, has really the tweet that I tweeted at the top of the page, if you will. I haven't.
There you go. Makes sense.
It's in the beginning stages, and then it dives a lot deeper into where that tweet came from, why it was on my heart, the private conversations that happened, the incidents that happened in the practice field or wherever it may be, and then below that, and this is my wife's idea. It kind of has a timeout, if you will, where it asks you a question, a reflecting question. Some of my favorite books are books that are not hard to read or even take that long, but take you a long time because you put it down, you close it, you dog ear it, and you just start thinking about how it applies to your own life. So my prayer with the book is that it will, I used to jokingly say it'll sell at least 3 copies. My dad will buy one, my mom will buy one, my wife will buy one. Well, my father passed away, so I'm guaranteed at least 2 copies now of that book to be sold. But in all seriousness, my prayer is that, similar to the tweets, it'll be something that certain people will purchase and just kind of have laying by their bedside or wherever, open it up, have a real short read, but have them reflect on it and have them change the way they coach or teach or parent or interact with other human beings.
Well, I love that. So you've got the book coming out. When's that? Any idea when that's coming out?
Within the year, within 2024, I believe. The company I'm working with says it's about a 6 to 12 month process of once the book is finished being written, of editing and corrections and whatnot.
That's fantastic. So you've got the book coming out. You've got your website that we talked about. That's CoachKurtHeinz.com. Motivational gigs, right? Speaking gigs. What else do you do for folks?
Just motivational speaking, some life coaching. It's the funny thing about it is it's all been organic through Twitter. I keep calling it Twitter X, whatever you want to call it, but through Twitter, just connecting with people. I'll tell you one of the coolest things, and this relates to what we're talking about. When my father did pass away about a year and a half ago now, the ugliest video I've ever done was sitting upstairs on the couch in our bedroom the day after he passed. And I remember saying in the video, and I'm paraphrasing, but I don't even know why I'm doing this, whether it's for my own healing or whatever, someone else needs to hear this. But I spoke briefly about my father and about people, if you will. Just legit snot bubbles, tears, veins popping, just crying. Didn't think or care if it was going to get one retweet or not. And at that moment, honestly, wasn't even sure my heart was in the place that this might benefit someone else, but I just needed to do it for my own healing. Ended up getting, you know, several hundred retweets or whatever, and got close to 1,000 private messages from people, but there was one that I pray never forget, Don, and it was a woman. I don't remember her name, and in fairness, if I did, I probably wouldn't say because I don't have her permission to. But
Right, right.
There was a woman that reached out to me, and she said, my husband and I had a falling out with our adult son. Haven't spoken to him in 4 years. We sent the video to him, and he just called us. And for me,
holy crud! Wow, game line. That's a game changer.
Yeah, and for me, Don, I get emotional about it now. It was such a beautiful, like, Dad, that's who you made me to be. You know, it wasn't something special that I did, but it was one more of like, aha, Dad, here you are again. Because my father, he never used the word servant leadership. I didn't hear about that until I read that book.
Right.
But my father was one of the greatest servant leaders I've ever met in serving his church community, his neighbors. He would stop on the side of the road if someone broken down. And as I think, like all foolish, naive, arrogant young men, our fathers are idiots when we're teenagers. Then we grow up a little bit. We're like, oh, my dad was a little bit smarter than I realized and gave him credit for.
Sure.
So, yeah. And the reason I share that is because I think social media connected the two of us. And I believe and I hope our relationship will grow. I mean, for sometimes it's just a flash in the pan. But I think if used the right way, social media is going to connect people and help change lives that would have never happened if not had we been on this platform.
Right on, dude. I'm getting chills. No, that's so spot on, brother. And you got a little bit of head start than I did on social media. But Twitter has been really good to me. I've been able to share and help a lot of people. And I love those little messages. You don't even know you're talking to somebody and somebody says, hey, by the way, this made a difference. Like, oh, wow. Yeah. That's God, right? It's just sharing what's on your heart and being honest.
Amen.
And open and vulnerable, right? I think the too much posturing going on, especially in the world of athletics, right? A lot of posturing going on, a lot of people not being real. And I appreciate you being real, man. I do.
I appreciate that. I'm going to cheat for a second. I'm going to go back to the elevator conversation you said with the young coach going to the 47th floor, I think you said. Transparency. You just alluded to that.
Yeah.
I think that's another great key to – I don't think enough coaches, teachers, parents give our youth credit. And our youth being whether they're 9-year-old, fourth graders in my fourth grade class, high school student athletes or collegiate student athletes, they're smarter than many adults give them credit, and they see through the BS. If you're trying to act like someone else, they're going to see through it. And the problem with that is if they don't think you're being transparent and authentic and real, they're not going to come to you with problems. I had a coach years ago that said, you know, I don't think the kids are, they don't respect you. This was my buddy, Derek, who's one of my best friends there.
Right.
It was at the end of my first year of coaching after losing every game. I had a coaches meeting. It was my first year as head coach. And I said, I'm not going to change just for the sake of it. But what's something I did that you would like me to do differently? I did that you wish I didn't do, or I don't do that you wish I would. And it was silent for about 30 seconds. It felt like 30 minutes. And finally, Derek, and I told him, I mentioned his name often on podcasts. He said, I don't think the kids respect you. And I felt myself get red. I was like, all right, well, give me an example. He's like, what do you mean?
Right.
I'm like, do they talk back? Do they talk behind my back? Are they leaving the weight room, the locker room, the field a mess? He's like, no, they do all that stuff. And then he paused and he goes, they're not afraid of you. And I felt such a calm come over me. And I said, those are two completely different things. And he said, well, I think now remember, he played Division I football, and he thought football at that time should just be X's nose. He said, I think a head coach should be feared. And I said, Derek, I said, if they fear me when this young man or young woman is coming out of the closet or suicidal or going through a divorce in the house or whatever challenges life throws at them, they're not going to come to me. And I said, I don't care at all about being feared. I want to know that I want my players to know that I love them. You know, and I'm not saying I want to be loved, because not every player is going to love us.
Right.
And it might be 20 years down the road, they go, oh, okay, I understand what Coach Williams is doing.
Right.
Coach Hines is doing. But I think if we are allowing ourselves to be ourselves and we are transparent, it's going to tear down a lot of walls of players, coaches we coach with, and families, to allow them to have honest, open conversations with us to change more lives.
I love that. Dude, that is such a great note to go out on, Kurt. I'm glad you revisited that because it's so spot on. So on Twitter, super simple, Coach Kurt Hines. That's Kurt with a K, Coach Kurt Hines. Follow him. Give him a follow. And CoachKurtHeinz.com is his website if you want to book an engagement. Thank you again, Coach, for coming on with us. I think this is going to help some young coaches and some young players. I really appreciate you
doing a blast. This for us. I had a blast being on with you, Don. I appreciate you, and thank you.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. Inside College Soccer is brought to you by Sports Recruiting USA.